Welcome to Talking Cybersecurity, a weekly podcast listened to in over 50 countries. My name is Richard Herron and I am your presenter. In the Talking Cybersecurity podcast, expect to hear all things related to the cybersecurity industry, whether that's getting your first job, interviews, board reports, data breaches, different approaches to cybersecurity, or conferences. None of the opinions expressed on this podcast by myself or guests are necessarily reflective of the opinions of the organisations we represent. If you want to continue the conversation, feel free to join the LinkedIn group, Talking Cybersecurity. I use Pixabay for most of the music heard on this podcast. Ni hao. Hi everyone and welcome to episode 68 of Talking Cybersecurity. Episode 68, eh? And they said it'd never last. Today we'll complete our three-episode venture into all things credential stuffing with Ollie Stimpson from CyberArk. Before we get into it, with 6 months to go before ASA Melbourne 2024, you might want to think about doing a talk. B-Sides Melbourne will also be here before you know it. I went there last year for the first time, and it was a pretty good get-together over a weekend. I certainly saw some old faces, including Nigel Fair, Daisy Wong, Austin Guo, and I met some new people as well. Always good to go to a variety of events to pick up on some different perspectives. And while I'm at it, I'd just like to say some random names of people who listen to the podcast. I can't name all of you because with 10,000 or so followers, I'd be here all day and all night. So, quick hellos and thank you for listening to just four people. Young Dominic, who is 4 months into his cyber security journey. Coincidentally, he's from my old childhood suburb and went to a school I used to swim against. Stick with cyber, young man. Hi to Stephen, we always sort of catch up on LinkedIn. Also, hi to Vern, it was good to speak to you last week. And lastly, hi to Bharat. Thanks for your message. Hopefully I'll get time to catch up with you in the city sometime soon. Oh, one thing that did pop up recently, and this will be of interest to you if you are a global company. Many organisations in the UK now are mandating that any pen tests must be conducted by what's called a Check Pen Approved Pen Tester. It's a little bit like being CREST approved, but it's called Check. So if you're doing pen tests either in the UK or in another country on applications that are being used in the UK, you may want to Google the whole check, C-H-E-C-K, check pen testing approval process. That's it for today, but let's get stuck into the third and final part of credential stuffing with Ollie Stimpson from CyberArk.
All of this presents a risk, and it's driven by the fact that that browser is consumer grade. So CyberArk very recently, just a couple of weeks ago, launched the first identity security browser, which recognizes that humans use browsers to access things. Humans are compromised through their identity. So let's combine the two and secure human user identity in the browser. And that's something as well that we see, especially as we think about this approach of securing the most risky access in the enterprise. Hey, don't build all your controls, but put a consumer-grade product in front of it, recognizing that if a threat actor is going to try and target your organization, they're going to use the low-hanging fruit, be it a poor password or a session cookie, and the browser should not be allowing that threat actor to waltz through the door.
Where would I find more information about that identity security browser? On the CyberArk website, or?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, it's a recent thing, so it's pretty front and center if you go there right now. So yeah, head to cyberark.com and you'll see about the CyberArk secure browser. It should be right there.
Where do you see this threat landscape for credential stuffing going? Is it going to go away? Is it going to get worse? Are they going to get smarter? Are they all going to target session cookies? Where do you reckon we're going with credential stuffing?
Regrettably so. Identity has long been one of the primary attack methods. The old phrase is it's passwords or patching that gets you. And hey, they have a reason for that. They're the low-hanging fruit. They're readily available. We've seen many compromises just in the last year that have unfortunately resulted from poor practice or just not being able to keep up with the requirements of security around passwords or integrity and security around patching. So really, we only see this one way. On the consumer side, the Australian government is investing in digital identity for a reason, because, hey, that's how you're going to target consumers, and there'll be a large cost to both the individual and corporate entities as a result of that. But on the corporate side, this is the way that organizations are attacked. When we think about statistics that a user typically has around 30 web applications that they have access to come back to your point around remembering 20 credentials, well, hey, that's potentially 30 different passwords I need to remember. And that's just for your standard user, let alone someone who works in IT and is accessing servers or cloud resources or managing SaaS applications at the back end. So that huge growth in the number of identities means that this is only going to get worse. And that's not to mention non-human users. The application credentials, the application identities, for organizations that are digitalizing rapidly, they're driving up their application adoption. They are allowing their developers to drive the business forward. And that means the creation of a huge number of secrets and certificates and keys that allow those applications to communicate with one another. So we've seen a huge growth. We estimate, and this is widely corroborated across the industry, so don't just listen to me, that there are around 45 machine identities for every human identity. And we often see that as a miss for our customers. They don't consider the non-human element in their program. So it's really, unfortunately, all of this comes back to a really challenging area for the modern security leader, and something that, as a result, we're seeing considerable investment will need to be made in over the coming years.
With your discussion on digital identity bill and mention of Claire O'Neill, I started thinking about the legal or regulatory implications associated with credential stuffing. Is the real legal or regulatory implication just breach of the Privacy Act?
It's important to have a mature conversation on that point, because there's a very real-world compromise, real-world consequences of potentially compromising a credential through credential stuffing or another mean. It's natural to focus on the privacy angle. We've seen a number of large compromises within Australia over the past 18 months that have had significant privacy implications for a great number of people. There's also the human element as well. There's a huge amount of stress and concern if an individual's identity is compromised, and potential loss of financial loss resulting from that as well. But there's another side to it, and we're seeing a strong element of investment here and push from the Australian government is, of course, security of critical infrastructure. If we know that over 80% of advanced cyber attacks will use a compromised identity in the attack chain, the vast majority, well over 90% of our customers say that they've had an identity-related compromise in the past year, despite investing in protection around and security around identity with organizations like CyberArk. There's a very real consequence for Australian critical infrastructure through that. And we're seeing naturally through things like the SOCI Act and the various other elements of that, which will again not run through today, there can be a very real consequence to Australian critical infrastructure of compromise, even of a single identity. So it's broader and it's growing as well. And as I mentioned, I've worked overseas. I work as part of a global team. This isn't Australia specific. We saw things like on the privacy side, GDPR set the global standard out of the EU. But we see other legislation appearing globally on the critical infrastructure side. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was a focus from CISA, the US cyber regulator, an advisory on the water treatment industries and entities of the United States. And Australia is part of the Five Eyes. We collaborate with these partners for a reason. And you'll see increasingly that when one of these entities, be it someone like CISA in the US, the NCSC in the UK, makes an announcement, they do so as part of the Five Eyes. So if we want a viewpoint on what needs to be done, then let's collaborate both across government and in industry because as we touched on before, the consequences of an identity-related compromise, we see at CyberArk, are only going to be getting worse.
Yep. Have you got any advice for individuals or organizations that have been victims of credential stuffing attacks?
It's a challenging spot to speak to someone. It's a widely spread problem. So first of all, I think most of our cyber leaders recognize these days that identity is one of the leading sources of compromise. So the advice would be, well, we'll review what happened, but think again about those practices of both detection and response and prevention. You know, the viewpoint, well, if a threat actor, if a criminal came in this way, you know, let's even think about our house at this point. If someone came in the front door last time, if we put a camera at that point of access, will it catch them next time? Well, yeah, maybe if they come in again, but it also might not, right? They could come in through the window next time. So it's a very difficult situation when something has happened, but to think holistically and strategically about what needs to be done, not just to react and say, well, it happened this way once, let's do it that way again, but to think about a risk-driven approach. We would always advocate for looking at securing the keys to the kingdom, recognizing the type of access that really should be tightly controlled first and then working downwards. And that risk-based approach, applying intelligent privilege controls in the business, is really the bread and butter of what CyberArk's been doing for many years and continues to see a lot of customer demand from Australia and around the world.
It's interesting. You mentioned the magic word response in your response there, and it got me thinking that a lot of security people and teams I know, they spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of dollars in detection and prevention, but very little time is spent on response, as in, you know, incident response plans, documenting them, having tabletop exercises. How important do you see incident response plans as far as security is concerned?
It's something that we've both heard a lot over recent years. You know, the idea that we've implemented the technology, so surely we're safe, right? But boards are really aware of the fact and increasingly aware that we need to plan for the worst. So it can't be overstated the importance of having that response plan, both on the technical side, but also on the business side as well. Like, what is actually going to happen if the worst happens? Have we tabletop that? Have we engaged partners in all forms that will work with us at that time of need? And again, that's part of where CyberArk fits in. But also, what does the rebuild look like? That's a very real question. Some of the leading legislation that we see around the world is around operational resilience. So we've moved past that preventative mindset on the regulatory side, like, will risk reduce, to a, well, if something does happen, how do we respond? Like, let's say something, the bank has gone down. Well, how do we rebuild that service from scratch? How quickly could we do that? What would that look like? What functionality, what business process would we get on board at day A, B, C, D? And that's something that really does take that careful consideration and planning, because it's hard enough and unfortunate enough when something does happen, but that's not the time to start forming those plans. Unfortunately, they really should be prepared beforehand. And we can't put enough emphasis on that as industry about how taking the time to prepare is as important as having a plan ready to go.
Okay, Ollie, we're near the end of the podcast. I've got one hard-hitting question for you when it comes to, well, identity in general, and that is, maybe I've been unlucky, I don't know, or maybe this is a common thing, but most identity projects I've been involved in seem to be over time, over budget, and almost de-scoped. Are they common features of identity project, or is that, have I just been unlucky?
So, hey, a hard-hitting question to wrap us up today. I'm happy to answer that, because I think it's important. You know, I've extolled the benefits of securing identity and over the course of our recording today. But, you know, we maybe have listeners who are agreeing with you there, going, I've had challenges with elements of my security program. I've had challenges with elements of my identity strategy as well. I think a couple of key points that have come out in my experience of working at CyberArk is, we ultimately have to recognize that identity is the ultimate people process technology problem. So, hey, we're talking about, literally talking about people. I don't know if there's a truer definition of this in the security setting, but we're literally talking about the people, how they access the technology and the process for that. So what we often see is that all three of those elements are not recognized. I ultimately work for CyberArk and we provide technology. So if you're thinking about the people somewhat and you're looking at the technology and you're gonna make a decision that CyberArk's for you, or hey, great choice first of all, but we come back and ask that point around, well, let's really think about the people. Let's really think about the people again, and let's also think about the process for this, because getting this right, putting a control in place that is first of all usable, and second of all is going to reduce risk, is key, and that balance has to be sought. But we also would emphasize that there's going to need to be some change to do this right. You know, let's take an example. Let's say that there's a hard-coded credential in a script that hasn't been changed for 25 years because someone built it 25 years ago. They're long gone from the organization, but that password sits there and actually it kind of underpins the running of that key service. And if that ever went down, well, that would be a big problem. So don't even think about making us change it. Well, as we've touched on today, that viewpoint is having to shift in Australia and around the world. So in terms of building that successful program, think about the technology, yes, but think about the people in the process. Like, if we're going to need to go out and drive some change here, how do we go about that in the right way? And how do we make that beneficial to the business, but also beneficial to the users as well? You know, maybe actually that script, you know, it's not great that really we aren't sure on the dependencies and, you know, we were a bit worried about that actually. Let's really go and talk to these people and make it work. And if there are challenges in identity or other security programs, maybe that's one thing I'd point towards immediately, is to say, well, think about the people in the process as much as or if not more than the technology. It was a bit of a curveball, so I'll probably leave it at that because it's a complex area in its own right.
Yeah. And look, I think you're right. You know, when you responded to that, I was thinking, you're right, it is the real people process technology application here. It's not as if you're saying, okay, you know what, Ollie, we're going to replace antivirus one with antivirus two tomorrow. So we remove antivirus one, we've installed antivirus two overnight, reboot your machine when you come in, and it'll be relatively seamless. It's not like that. Privilege Access Management is a really smart tool. It's very helpful. Some things just don't come easy, and I'm not saying it's difficult to install Privilege Access Management. All I'm saying is you've got to do your due diligence with your people, your process, and your technology, and then it will work. I'm sure there's 1,001 companies who say it may have been a semi-hard journey to get here. We're so grateful we're at this destination now.
I think so, and you know, maybe if I can just jump in one last time on that. The challenge what you're talking about there is around privileged access management, which is ultimately securing credentials in long-lived systems like Windows and Unix systems, the bread and butter of IT as it was. And yeah, change management to onboard that local admin account, that service account, it's going to take some time, and it's a programmatic approach needed to drive that through consistently. But organizations have changed, and that allows some quick wins in the identity space. So, hey, maybe it's using the browser, which allows us to remove the risk of a session cookie compromise overnight. Maybe actually it's something like the cloud, which instead of there's an admin account, it needs to be rotated, we need a change management process around that. Maybe actually we say, well, we can go into our cloud console. It's API driven, so the integration's already there. We can allow a user work natively within the experience they expect, which is using the browser or the CLI to access that platform, and quickly go in and actually change how they access the roles within AWS, Azure, or GCP, and do that overnight to say, well, actually, we just need you to do one extra step. So the only thing we're changing between Friday night and Monday morning is that you come in and actually we make you authenticate one more time. Now, the users are behind that. It's maybe we sometimes hear the phrase, developers don't care about security. They do. They care about the integrity and the operability of their application. So making them do the right thing is not too much of an ask. And that process of saying, well, we've shifted these 500 users, the way they access the console, so that actually if someone compromised their identity, they wouldn't immediately gain access to the console or the CLI. That's a real win, and that's not going to be something that requires that same level of emphasis around, well, let's go in and let's change that 25-year-old service account. So there's definitely quick wins as the technology landscape has got more dynamic. Hey, it's opened up opportunities for threat actors, unfortunately, but we've definitely worked hard to innovate and also try and leverage those new environments to deliver quicker wins to our customer base as well.
Look, I've got to thank you for being very generous with your time. I've learnt a lot, and I'm certainly going to be looking at the identity security browser that should be detailed on CyberArk's website.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping all the listeners have learnt a bit in the last few episodes, because this interview I'll have to put over 2, maybe 3 episodes. So I hope the listeners have learnt as much as I have. Any last words from you, Mr. Stimson? Or is that it for you? You talked out.
I think I am. I'm looking at the clock. We've gone well over time, so I'm happy to leave it at that. Thank
sure.
you, Richard.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Richard. Speak soon.
No worries. Well, folks, that wraps up the discussion on credential stuffing with Ollie Stimson from CyberArk. I've just re-listened to parts 1, 2, and 3, and now I've got a nice consolidated view on credential stuffing. You may want to do the same. You may not. Anyway, folks, enjoy what's left of the weekend, and I hope you have a great week coming up. I know I will. See ya.